Howdy.
Howdy.
Yeah, someday someone's going to go to someone at Texas A&M and say, she really does this in Montreal. And they're going to say, she does. She had real problems saying howdy in Texas. But anyway, welcome. And I'm glad that there are so many of us here. This is a great room, actually. I like this room because I feel like you're close. And that's good for me because I can see your faces, I can see what's going on, and I'm not getting a crick in my neck from that other room. So this is a specially called Dean's Corner meeting. Every once in a while we'll do this if we think that we have something special that we need to share with you. And all of you, this meeting is going to be devoted strictly to a report out of our planning retreat. I think that most of you were involved in talking with eventually talking with people at the AD level about what you thought some of our strategic initiatives should be. And we went away, five of us went away for a day and a half, almost 2 days. And believe it or not, walking through the woods, thinking great thoughts. But we had a couple of 12-hour days there. And I have to tell you, when I got back, I couldn't speak English, much less French. And so we worked pretty hard. And I think that we came up with a good first plan for the first couple of years here. And we did, I did get to see my first mustache in a while. It came out of the water, and I thought at first that it was a snake. And people assured me that there are no poisonous snakes in Canada. Apparently this part of Canada, which I am very grateful for because my instinct said water moccasin. And no, it was just this little very curious red muskrat, which I'd never seen before, which I thought was pretty cool. We were out at the Galt Estate, and it's a beautiful place. It's historically important to McGill, and it has a wonderful sanctuary. It's a nature preserve. And so we couldn't get off the paths, and it was just a really wonderful experience. And as I said, it was a place where we could get away and not be able to do anything except deal with one another with work priorities. And that's what I wanted to do. So you'll see you will see a lot of your ideas coming out in what I say. You'll also see that there are some things that I don't mention, and that means that we're not going to do those right now. And you can say, what about whatever, and I'll tell you about it, or what we thought about it. Keep in mind that this plan is not at all down to the level of a kind of formal strategic plan in which you'd have start out with vision, mission, goals, objectives, tasks. We're not doing that. We're taking a much broader brushstroke. And as I told you before, that's my style, because I feel that we need to be able to get in input, decide what we want to do, and then do it. And spend our time doing it as opposed to spending a lot of time crossing the I's and crossing the T's and dotting the I's on a strategic plan. Don't have anything against strategic plans. I just think that right now in this organization and at this point in time in our profession, this is the sort of planning that we need to do. So first I'm going to go over, you'll see that a lot of the things I talk about may be at a little higher level, higher conceptual level than a lot of the input we got. And that's the level that we're dealing with. There will be more implementation tasks, strategy sort of things that come out as we move to implementation of some of the things I talk about. We did start out in talking about some of our looking into the crystal ball of what our world, our library world, is going to look like, and then just thinking of some values and assumptions that we have based upon what we think that world will look like. And the first one of the general givens for everything that we do is going to be that we have to communicate. And we have to communicate and communicate and communicate in many different forums, in many different ways. And it does, as I've said now several times, Communicating is a two-way street. I talk, you listen, you talk, I listen. And when we do that, it doesn't mean that I always agree with what you're saying, or you don't have to agree with what I'm saying, but it does mean that we have the responsibility to listen. Agreeing and listening are two different things. So I have the responsibility to listen. None of us always have the responsibility to agree. Another given is that we do have an environment where we're going to foster a culture of innovation and service. Service is what we do. That there is no reason for libraries to exist except, in the end, the service of humanity. In the first instance, for us, that's our community of learners and researchers. And all of us have heard that many times, but it truly is important. And fostering a world where you have ideas, where we implement ideas, and then in a fairly risk-free environment so that, you know, when you fail at something, you've always spent resources. But we can always change our mind when we get more information. You know, the most important thing is to do something, not just to sit there waiting for something to roll over you, because to decide not to do something is to make a decision. We are committed, totally committed to staff training. You can see that we've already put our money where our mouth is in our continuing education personnel development program. We're going to prefer digital forms. Whenever we have an alternative, we're going to prefer digital. Assessment is absolutely essential for informed decision making. I can't make decisions, nor will I conjure up decision makings that are totally intuitive. I do it, everyone does a lot of intuitive things by intuition, but in our world, we really need some of that data. And for that reason, we're hiring an assessment librarian who won't do all the assessment, but will certainly have coordination responsibility for that program. Open access is an important mandate. We aren't going to be able to change the world as we know it, where research libraries, and I'm talking about the 115 libraries in North America that are associated with universities, spend in the aggregate about $3.75 billion a year, largely on the same things. And as long as we're doing that, we can't take that money and devote it to things that I think are more important. It doesn't make, you know, where we a long time ago said that we're going to stop buying multiple digital copies of the same thing as much as we, in as often as we can, whenever it's possible, when we aren't stuck in these big package programs. It makes no sense for all the research libraries in Canada to be buying the same thing over and over and over again. And in the United States, we simply have to have ways where things change. And this is one of the major things. We had a roundtable discussion at the Dean's Retreat, and we all got to say one of the three things that kept us awake at night. And my three things were, the first one, all of you keep me awake at night. The second one was, I've got a library and I've got to build a healthy environment. And the third was that we have to do something about open access. We have to do something about the $3.75 billion that we spend together. And in that sense, collaboration is key. And data and institutional repositories remain a priority in collaboration with the University of Quebec in Canada. And those initially, but there are larger concentric circles in which we operate too in North America and the world. And in a strategic sense, what I go through here is where we're going to be directing our resources, our money. And so the budget will be in alignment with the priorities and the things that I start to talk about. So in starting out, we came up with five. I'm going to be talking about ideas and things that we want to do in three groups. The first group is going to consist of five directions, and they are the big ones. Think big, think important, think hard to do. Okay? And the first one is not snowy owls. I'm a little obsessed by those. It's a collection stewardship plan that we're going to do in the next year, and we're going to start to implement it. Okay, what does this mean? I think that all of you are saying, well, we have a collection development policies, and we have a deselection policy, and we know that we're preferring digital. And what does this mean? That haven't we done this a zillion times before? And yeah, we probably have, but in bits and pieces. I'm talking about a plan that takes into consideration these issues. That are, first, that our users prefer convenience. They value convenience over anything. So that's why we prefer digital. That we will live and continue to live in a world that's a hybrid world of proprietary information that we have to pay for and free information that's just out there. That, and this is key, that there is no proven digital preservation model out there. So what does this mean? That means that we can't throw away print, all print, just because we have it in digital form yet. It means that we have to have a, plan for a storage facility. We have to know what we will put in a storage facility for what amount of time. Basically, if you can think of things in these terms, there are some legacy collections at McGill that are very important. Obviously, our rare and special collections are the things that you think of first. But because of McGill's history and because of its place in Canada, up until about the mid-1960s, McGill has true legacy collections that probably in certain fields we can pretty much assume were not owned by other libraries in Canada. Particularly in fields such as medicine, dentistry, law, Islamic studies, East Asian studies, and some arts areas. We simply know that we are probably the library of record for these materials. And even if they're current imprints from the 1940s, those are things that we can't just think about getting rid of. Until we know that there is a collaborative system within Canada that allows us to store these sorts of materials and to make them available in a single copy that is jointly owned. There's a concept called resource in common. Basically, in the Association of Research Libraries, libraries are getting together, particularly with their journal runs. They are discarding, all libraries are discarding their back runs of things that they own digitally, except one copy that goes into storage, and that one print copy, in terms of all statistics, and therefore in terms of ratings, is owned in common and counts as though you still had the volume. So what we have to do is to know what materials we will keep in perpetuity, what materials we will take off our shelves because we have agreements for resources in common that we can then just get rid of right away, and those materials that we know that we have to somehow figure out that we put in storage facilities until we come up, and humankind will come up with a way to forward migrate digital versions in a system that is safer than what we have right now. So we're talking 50 years. And you don't have to build a building that's like McLennan, air-conditioned and humidity control like you have for rare books, for stuff that you're going to throw away in 50 years. But you have to know, you have to systematically look at the different things in your collection and figure out what fits into which one of these categories across all of our libraries, and not just willy-nilly throw a bunch of stuff into the McLennan basement. So what does this mean? This means that we've got a lot of work ahead. First, we have to decide, make some decisions. And I've given you some of the broad brush outlines. We know, by the way, locks and portico. Cornell recently did an analysis of what percentage of their digital collections were actually safeguarded in portico, and it's about 10 to 15%. So that does mean, I mean, don't believe for a second that I'm a lover of print because it's not convenient. I mean, there's some stuff, Richard stuff, I like a lot. You know, that his kind of print stuff. Okay, I said I really, essentially what I said was I love rare materials. But, you know, believe me, I'm not fond of multiple versions of Moody's, which is also a private joke between Richard and me. And certainly multiple copies of print journals are absolutely useless. But we have to make sure that in terms of really national in a national collaborative system, that we have access to that one print copy. And so it takes collaboration's the name of the game. And it also is a series of deciding what we keep on site, what we keep forever, what we temporarily put in storage, what we might put in storage forever, and what we have immediately available to users across all of our libraries in a systematic way. And then we roll up our sleeves and we go about doing that. And so that's a huge amount of work. So we will be putting together, as I've said, librarianship to a great extent right now is a series, particularly at the professional level, is a series of ongoing changing projects. And we will be putting together a working group that will be dealing with putting together a collection stewardship plan and then moving to implementation, and we'll be doing that over the next 12 months. And the key person leading that will be Joseph, because it's mainly a collection development effort. So this really does mean, I mean, I can tell you I have gone around and I've opened doors, and we have stuff stashed in all sorts of nooks and crannies around here. And, you know, that kind of idea of an alphabet, you start with the A's and you go to Z, I don't think there's a single library that goes from A to Z around here. And that's not a very, intuitive thing to do for users. You know, I'm not saying we have to make it perfect, because foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds, and I truly believe that. But if we can get something that is sort of from A to Z in most of our libraries, that would be a very nice thing to do. So just in terms of just very, very basic strategy things, we thought before 1821, when McGill started, to 1968, which is about the time that universities in Canada exploded and many things are owned in common. So we're talking about the legacy period, roughly. These years can change a little bit. Roughly the legacy period of McGill, that we'll probably be keeping one print copy until we have national discussions. The next point in the strategy will be from 1969-ish to 2000, we'll retain one copy of all print material, journals, and monographs in discipline areas that we know are McGill's strengths, historical strengths: medicine, dentistry, law, Islamic studies, East Asian studies, some areas within arts to be defined, that we know are truly our legacy strengths, and that we will be able to look at Canada and say, we're keeping this stuff, you guys don't have to. And all of, you know, these are broad brushstrokes. Some of this stuff can change. But the idea is that everything is done in a collaborative way. We'll continue to delete material in all other areas if we hold the material in electronic form, because we will rely on others. Who have strengths who have collections that are deeper and have legacy collections in other disciplines that we don't. And we will always prefer digital, and we will never buy. I take that back. I should never say never. We will hardly ever buy anything in print if we can buy it digitally. That means books. There are, I guess, 14% of the books that we bought last year were digital. There's some something. Maybe somebody gave me a statistic like that recently. Okay. Just a couple of other things. I've got this, and this will be available on the website as soon as you get out of this room. And for sustainability, we didn't print it. So if you want to kind of have a little twitch of conscience and print it out, no one's going to know because you're doing it in private. But that's why I don't have it here to print out to you. It was intentional, actually. Okay, but there's nothing secret here that I'm reading from. This is all out to you as soon as you get out of this room. Okay, the second thing that we have here is we're going to reimagine the organization. And we're going to do this really quickly. And this is first steps to looking at tweaks in the organizational structure that we'll be making. But by September the 1st, and this will be in the hands of Dean's Cabinet, on the basis of service being user-driven, we're going to restructure things within Hustle, Life Sciences, Schulich, and Library Technology. And we are going to single service points. We're going to look at the team structure and with an eye toward that going away. Okay.
Going away?
Yes. The team structure going away. Okay. So we're not going to have, let me just say this, we're not going to have teams. By September the 1st, we're not going to have teams unless you love the word of teams, but we're not going to have teams in the structure that we've had before. Okay. That's not going to be as difficult as one might think. And we'll just be putting things together in somewhat more of a function-based model. Wrong computer. The third major thing that we're going to be doing is looking at the space plan for McLennan Redpath. We're now at a point where we can't go forward. We just cannot go forward until we decide what we're going to do in a systematic way with the McLennan Redpath structure. This doesn't surprise anyone. There have been ongoing efforts for renovation in this structure for years and years now. But what we need to do is to step back and figure out what we want to do in a systematic way. So the first thing, you'd be surprised that the very first step in this is who are the stakeholders in this building complex? And I met this week with Jim Nicell, who's the honcho for facilities at the university, and we came up with a list of 7 or 8, and we probably forgot somebody. And it's all, you know, you just have to kind of think of the list and you'll put them together. Archives, Bernie, dining services, there are tradespeople whose homes are in the basements of McLennan. We've got the writing center, teaching and learning, the welcome center and enrollment services, and then somehow we do library stuff in there too. Space at this university is at an incredible premium, particularly space that's downhill. And everybody in the world is going to my boss, the provost, saying, I need space, and I need the library space because it's in a really good place. Well, apparently a lot of people have been successful in that over the years because we have lots of people who live with us. When we think of a space plan for the McLennan Redpath complex, if we're realistic, we're going to say, who's in there And what are we going to look at in terms of how to remodel this whole complex over over several years? And we can't do that until we have a full design. And we can't do that until we come up with a user assessment. And we can't do that until we do some of the collection stuff that I was telling you about. Because how can we decide how much stacked space we need if we don't know really what we're going to have on site and what we're going to have in storage? So you can see these are really hard problems. These are hard problems. This is why these are the things we need to be doing. These are not the things we need to just be sitting back and saying, let them happen. Let's look at them, put them on the table, scratch them behind the ears, pet them on the head, and roll up our sleeves and get this sort of work done. In this plan, there are some givens. The first floor will be conceptualized as an all-student floor, which means that all staff on the first floor will be officed elsewhere. Now, the next question is, if I'm not going to be on the first floor, where am I going to be? And I can't tell you, because I don't know where I'm going to be, because my office is on the first floor. So these are the sorts of domino effects that we know that we need to do. But there are some certain basic assumptions that we're going to make, and that is that floors such as the first floor are going to be student-focused and student-driven on their from the point of view of their needs, and not what we think their needs are, but what they identify to us. And right now they're saying they need all kinds of space, from very informal space where they can have a cup of coffee legitimately and guilt-free, down to group study spaces and informal spaces that they can form and unform depending upon their need, a lot of high-tech stuff, down to spaces that are ninja quiet. Because sometimes you got to prove a proof. And I can't do that with rock and roll myself. So some people can, I can't. So it depends upon what you're doing at different times. We have to accommodate the needs for our students. And the most important, highest square footage real estate in our library system for the bulk of our students is the first floor of this complex. And if you look at a floor plan of Redpath McLennan, it's a huge imprint. It's a not imprint. That's the librarian coming out of me. Footprint. There are some things we can't change that we can make better, like the bathroom, that central bathroom structure in Redpath, and the elevators there. That sort of infrastructure you can't move, but you can come up to code, and you can make them places that you're not afraid to go into. I personally have always been afraid to go in them. I haven't ventured into them. But I have heard stories. Okay. We'll be telling you what we find out as we develop these plans. And you guys, everyone has to be patient in knowing that as you develop a plan, plans change. Okay? So as we learn more, what I tell you one day may change the next. But I'd really rather tell you and say, don't hold me to this. I'd rather be able to look at you and say, you know, these are the lives we lead. You've nothing certain. I'll tell you what I know now, but it's not real until the bricks and mortar come in. Okay? Next thing. Reserves enhancements. This is for the fall and ongoing through the year. We would like to have self-serve and hustle by January of 2012, and this is on the basis of a lot of good work that two working groups and a combined working group now has put together. And we're going to buy a big vending machine. Actually, we're going to buy two big vending machines now. One is going to be in management over here, because as you know, we've we're about to close down this library, and the thing that people were most concerned about was reserves. Well, we're going to get a reserve machine that will be available 24 hours a day. And we will be buying another one for Schulich as soon as we possibly can. We will be thinking in terms of these are great machines. Those of you who are going to be at ALA, and I know there are several of us who are going to be there, can go by and visit. It's called Live Dispenser. You can go by and visit the booth and look at the very one that will be coming to us, because we've already purchased the demo version that will be at ALA. And that'll be the one that's coming up to management. Again, with reserves, a given will be that we will have a preference for digital materials. If something is available digitally, we'll prefer buying it digitally. The co-leads on this are going to be Louis and Carol, and there'll be a working group, of course, that will be announced, And there will be a self-service reserve team in Hustle that will be put together for the winter 2012 term. We may want to move that up a little bit if we find that everything is moving more successfully and quicker than we thought. Okay? The last final big thing is that we want to do a single service point everywhere. And we want to do this by January 2012. Co-leads again on this will be Louis and Carol. A given is that we think that users want one place to go if they've got questions. And we will provide them answers physically and virtually from a single point. We know that I've done this before, not I. There have been good people under me who did this before. In the library I was before, and it's something that there's a whole lot of experience out there in putting together single service points in libraries as big as the Humanities Library that we have here. Bigger, actually. And we're far from on the bleeding cutting edge of doing this. We're right sort of in the middle of the pack probably in doing it. Maybe even behind the curve a little bit in implementing it in terms of what research libraries are doing. But the idea is that a user comes in, they want one place to go to ask a question. They don't want to have to understand that if I've got a book that I need to borrow or a fine, I have to go to one desk, and if I've got a question, I've got to go to the other desk. I mean, practically speaking, users have always just asked the question that they have at the first place they come to, just like you do as real human beings in an airport, and not just the desk that says I. We do know that this can be cause some concern in the minds of a lot of staff and librarians, and we know that change like this is fundamental, and it's going to be, and it can be disruptive, and we know that. But again, the only thing that I'm never going to lead you down a primrose path. I'm going to tell you the truth. And the truth is that the only thing I can promise you is change. I will do it in as humane way as we possibly can. So that means we communicate. And we train, and we train, and we train. We aren't going to ask you to be perfect the first day you start to do anything. None of us are. None of us will be. None of us ever can be. We will offer you opportunities to do different things, to enrich your work. We have an HR advisor now whom you can go talk to anytime. She's going to be a busy girl. We're going to meet, we're going to talk about this stuff until everyone airs their concerns. It doesn't mean we're going to always agree with everything you say, but we will listen to you. I've got the responsibility to listen. We aren't going to be replacing people. We're going to be increasing levels of service through things like the automatic reserve book dispenser. this no one is going to lose a job. Your job may not look like what it did before, but you're not, we aren't going to be reducing positions, except perhaps by looking at positions as they come open. And that's something the entire university is going to be about, has been doing for quite some time. And after the Dean's Retreat, it's clear that we'll be doing a lot more of that, and we meaning the university as a whole. And there were some of the things, we got some concerns about people saying, well, if I quit, is my job going to be replaced? And what that really, I think, is under that is saying, I've done this work, I've devoted my life to doing work that I thought was important, and if you don't replace me, maybe that means that my work wasn't important. And that's simply not true, because the work that you were doing at the time that you were doing it was important, or a publicly funded university wouldn't have had you doing it. But it doesn't mean that we need to do everything in that way anymore, because it's, you know, the whole thing is, you know, we don't need firemen on the trains with steam engines because we don't have steam engines anymore. We don't need, we don't need skills for key punch machines because we don't key punch anymore. I bet that there are a lot of you who have never seen a key punch card. When I first ran my first programs, I had to use them. They were horrible. They were horrible. I never mastered them. But we don't need those skills anymore. Okay? So there are some things that are that will be going on like that. But so they're what you do in some jobs. Obviously, when we combine desks, some of the functions that happen in those desks and the way the functions happen is, are going to be different. They have to be, right? We'll talk to you. We'll hear your concerns. We will train you to do the new things that you need to do, and we'll help you through this. Okay. Now for things that are the next four. These are sort of the mid-range things that we're talking about. We got a lot of input about our information literacy program and how it's a little bit here and a little bit there, and it seems to be everybody's responsibility and nobody's. And so we decided that we would look at information literacy as an organization this year with an eye toward establishing an information literacy program system-wide, developing a training program, and sharing best practices. We'll do this right away. We'll form a working group to do it. So we probably got input about information literacy and our different programs for it from almost every library, from almost every group that we got information from. And it was clear we needed to do something about that. The next sort of mid-range thing is enhancements to document delivery. And the first thing when I say this, people are going to say, we don't have enough staff to do this. And I'll tell you, we know that. So if you can figure what that means, then you're probably pretty smart. Okay. Under Joseph's leadership and working with Valerie Maiman and others in a group to be announced, we want to improve document delivery services to faculty and students. We want to conceive of and try to deliver to the best of our ability requested print material to faculty offices. We want to deal with interbranch delivery for in-house materials, which is something I was kind of surprised didn't happen. Apparently you can leave books off. You can return books at any branch, but you can't ask another branch to deliver books to you. I thought that was kind of odd. Anyway, and we will. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
They say the cup is clean.
Okay. Thank you. that I didn't get a dirty cup. And we'd like to see what we can do about filling more ILL requests that we get from other libraries in recognition of the fact that we are a legacy collection. And when you're a legacy collection, you have a little bit more responsibility. And that's just the way the world is. We'd like to keep our libraries open 24/7 by extending service hours in two branches. Actually, this isn't quite right. It's not service hours. It's keeping the libraries open and not service hours. Okay. Yeah. Extended hours. Okay. Marie, no, she's not bad. She's going to correct this like crazy before you get it in print. Yeah, gasp. Even I was like, oh, no. Okay. No, surprise, surprise, we're not going to do this. But we are going to keep two of our branches open 24/7, and those we plan right now to be Hustle and Schulich by September 2011. And so basically what this means is contracting with security and housekeeping to keep the buildings open. Okay? It also means everything's going to wear out a lot faster, and we know that. But that's not a bad thing. Our students want this more than anything. It's the first thing that that any student group that I've gone out and talked to has said. Please make sure that if you have conversations, everybody can hear them. Okay? E-thesis access. Whoops. Okay, next thing here. We want to provide open access to all McGill theses and make this a priority, which means that we'd like to digitize 12,000 theses in 2 years. That's going to be Amy's just like, yeah, either that or she's got two windows she can choose to jump out of right there at her, right in the back there. Okay. Immediate action items. This is what we call low-hanging fruit. Things that are, we also call these things the no-brainers. We need a service level agreement to upgrade for McDonald Campus Library. There were several things that came to us from the McDonald Campus that were things that, why are they having to deal with these problems? And we will fix them. We will arrange for a local Mac ICS to service library equipment. And we'll do this by September the 1st. And Diane's going to work with Natalie to make that happen. We recognize, we heard lots of problems about, lots of questions about WorldCat. And what was clear to us was that, you know, again, you may agree or disagree with whether WorldCat should be the catalog in addition to the catalog, whether it should disappear off the face of the earth. But one thing that we recognized for sure that was happening was that as developments in WorldCat are happening, WorldCat Local are happening, we aren't being very good at communicating with changes. And therefore, some of the things that people were complaining about actually had been, that there had been things that had mitigated their concern that had happened that people simply didn't know about. And this really does come into the communicate priority. And communication is everyone's job. You know, it's not only my job to get up here and to talk to you. It's your job to, communication goes up and down in all levels. It's not top down, okay? It has to be crosswise, crossways, up, down, everywhere, or it simply won't work. We're going to go cashless at all branches, except only debit and credit cards in all branches, including Hustle and McDonald's. I have some people who were really surprised by this.
Okay.
That's the only time I heard a gasp up here. And we'll do that by September the 1st. We're going to investigate doing fine payments through Minerva and produce a plan by the summer of 2012. This Mohammed will be working with Diane, and we'll be putting together a working group to do this. So you can see there are lots of working groups that are going to come out of all of these priorities. We're going to improve signage, including the signage that was on the front door of which I caused quite a stir when apparently I walked in and said, we need to change this sign, and I don't know, it's really bad when the dean tells you to change signs. People get all upset. But anyway, we're going to review signs and how we do signs through all of our libraries. Maintenance and cleaning. We're going to review maintenance practices in all of the branches, and we're going to particularly focus on music and hustle because there seem to be some particular problems going on in those libraries. And Diane will take the lead on that with Francisco and branch heads. We're going to put together a sustainability plan and put together a working group that's going to go try to help us go green, or at least greener. I have a Kermit the Frog t-shirt that says, it's good to be green or something, I don't know, that I got at Disney World. It's quite nice. And in keeping with that, we really will try to do things like point you to a website instead of printing off a lot of copies of things like this. But also a way to, the only way I could recycle my zero Coke cans is to walk outside. I mean, I find that odd. So we'll fix that with people who are truly interested in it. We'll put out a call for volunteers, as we will for most of the working groups that we're talking about. We'll implement RDA. This is ongoing. But this is a big, big deal. I don't know if you know, this is something that's happening totally behind the scenes, but it affects all of us. And in the RDA world, doing this, in the cataloging world, this is fundamental and monumental. And we need to make sure that, yes? What does RDA stand for? I don't know what it stands for, but think of the cataloging. Okay, resource description and access. Think in terms of redoing the cataloging code and everything that that means, and that's what these folks are doing. And then after that, by the way, if you think that's not fun, the Library of Congress is redoing MARC format. So, which is something that we found out about, and Joseph was there at the ARL meeting. So all of you who work behind the scenes will have job security. We're going to join the Hathi Trust. This is really important in terms of a library that was not part of the Google Books project, but which will allow us access to many of the books that were digitized through that project, but by the libraries that digitized them, think Michigan, and think in terms of a group of libraries that were involved in digitizing many of their materials and collaborating with one another, we will be able to add our digital and born digital materials to Hathi Trust, and then we will operate within ourselves and providing access to these materials, preservation of these materials, without having to broker everything through Google, which means we have more control, which means we're dealing in our own world, and we have a place to put our digital materials and have them preserved in a collaborative way. Art store shared shelf. You'd be surprised how hard that is to say. And Louis, I told you were going to have to explain this.
Well, quickly, those of you who know about ArtStore, the database where you can access images from different collections all over the place, now they do allow or offer institutions to use their own platform for institutions to upload, manage their own image collection, and making them available right now to defined groups and eventually open access. Is this something we want to look at or not? Is this something that you can think about? And now, for example, we have also as an experience with older pictures, put them on Flickr. Would that be something that an art store or not? This is quickly what is art store shared shelf.
Okay. And I know that those of you who are dialing in didn't hear what Louis had to say, but if you catch him sometime, he will tell you all about Art Store Shared Shelf, and it's a very good thing. So that's the end of all of these things, and I will invite questions from here for clarification, for anything. You can see that next steps are going to involve the appointment of many task forces, many work groups, not M-I-N-I, M-A-N-Y, work groups. And we'll be soliciting interest for them, and then we'll be putting together those work groups based upon efficiency, really. Who needs to be there? How can we get the work done according to the timelines that we have very ambitiously set up? This is a whole lot. This is a huge agenda. And some of the things are very small, and some of the things are very big. But I welcome questions, comments about anything. Yes?
I would just like to know if the main floor is going to be solely for students, will there be a circulation desk? And if so, where will there be a circulation desk? Or are we just going digital with everything?
That's a great question, actually. And there will be a desk.
On the main floor?
Yeah.
We don't know.
It'll be on that floor.
Okay.
It'll be on a floor that people come in the doors, the first doors. But where it's going to be, we don't know. Because it could be where the borrowing desk is now, or it could be where the single service point is now. And I have heard great arguments for both places. And there are people, just as we're trained in libraries, there are people who are trained to do design who really are good at thinking through things and will help us think through a lot of these things and questions. But that's a good question. And no, it won't be all digital. We'll still need people. Well, if it's ever all digital, I will raise from my grave hundreds of years from now and be shocked, because we'll always need people to manage to interpret and manage these collections, even though a lot of it will be digital. Other questions? Yes, Cynthia.
Can you talk a little bit more about
Okay. The question is, and I didn't repeat the, I didn't say what the first question was, and the first question was for viewers out there, was will we have a service point on the first floor of the reimagined McLennan Red Path complex, or will it all be digital? And you heard my answer. Okay. And Cynthia is asking, can I talk a little bit more about rethinking the structures of the organizational structure of the library. We got lots and lots of input about the team structure. And so in focusing on the team structure, this is one of those things that I have said. If you try something and it doesn't work, you stop doing it. And so we will be thinking through wherever we have teams, and that's primarily in Hustle and somewhat in the other libraries, keep the things that people think are good about them, but not call them teams, and reorganize things more on a functional level. Does that help you? Is that sort of what you were thinking? Okay. Yes.
With the 24-hour reserve systems, say a student takes something out at 1 a.m., will the item have to be returned at 4 a.m., assuming a three-hour loan?
You know, that was a very granular reserve question that people who understand it a lot better than me would be able to answer. And I think the gist is that we have to think through our loan policies for reserve very carefully, given an environment of 24-hour operations. But keep in mind, if you have a live dispenser, you take out a book and you return it to the same machine. Do people understand that? So
my question is, when do you return the item? Because normally with reserves as it is now, you get it at a certain time in the evening, you have it until at least opening hours next day. But if it's 24 hours, does it mean really 24 hours?
Okay, Diane?
We asked that question when we investigated. Our understanding is from Jane that the loans policies that are in effect, it's reading the loans policies from the ILO system. So if you borrow it at
1 a.m., redo it.
It would redo the following morning.
Business hours, next day.
The machine follows the Aleph loan policy, so whatever the policies are that are currently in place would be in effect. So, yes, you borrow it at night, return it in the morning.
That's great.
Those sorts of things, I'm sorry, I'm not totally up on. There are lots and lots of people with gray matter. Yeah, there are lots and lots of people with gray matter who know those things better than I do. Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
We have open book exams.
Oh, open book exams.
If we go digital on these textbooks, what would happen?
Well, pedagogy and exams is
actually much more in the faculty's responsibility than it is ours. And I'm sure that they will deal with that. Okay? So I don't have an answer to that. What I'm saying is that, I don't know, I can imagine several things, but I don't want to assume something that's not within my bailiwick and expertise.
I was wondering if you put some in a notebook, like, you know, those little things that we rent out.
iPads or notebooks.
Yeah, it could be, you know. Yeah, I'm an early adopter of all technology, so that by the time I figure out how to use it, I go to the next thing. So I'm always in a state of being bamboozled by whatever I'm using. But, yeah, I can imagine being able to download a lot of information on either my iPhone or my iPad. Okay, yes.
More towards the digital. Some of the platforms we have for specifically e-books have limitations on them. Like if you borrow a book, you cannot return it in less than a week. You know, like whereas if we have a normal book, you just take it off the shelf, you read it, you put it back. Are we going to be looking at different platforms that don't have those kinds of limitations?
The question has to do with limitations on e-materials and that we have to make e-materials as accessible as print, if not more so. Because if the whole point is convenience and making e-versions more accessible, why would you go backwards instead of forwards? And that's a very good point. I mean, we run into that. We'll just have to be vigilant and watch what we're doing. We have the same problem with seats to databases. You only have 6 seats, and then you're locking people out. And we always have to watch those things as well. Okay, other questions? Somebody over here. Yes. You could have sat in the front, and
no,
I would have noticed
you first.
I prefer to get my exercise back.
Okay.
This is Lonnie speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Lonnie.
You'll know you're
going to
get a digital versus
print question from me. So.
Okay.
I don't mind digital, and most of the people who do selection or collections work don't mind buying digital. But there are limitations to buying the digital. And I'll give you one. I can't see too many problems, perhaps, in the sciences. But in the social sciences and humanities, you're automatically, by preferring digital, eliminating any and all scholarship in book history from this day on. So people who are studying the book and various editions of a particular author, etc., no longer will have that paper copy to look at. So automatically you're removing a whole discipline, and a growing one, by the way, in book history. So by preferring digital to print, I then would have to buy the digital complete works, latest edition of a particular edition of Shakespeare, with all the scholarly apparatus, all the annotations, digital. Anyone looking at the history of publications of the complete works of Shakespeare over the years, starting from 2011 onwards, or even before that, let's say within the 21st century, will not have the advantage of looking at any of those print if I don't borrow.
Is this a question or a comment?
It's both a statement. And maybe an idea that never print over digital could be in quotation marks for some selected areas.
Lonnie's making a really great point about the need to not use words like never, to never use words like never, and I agree with him. There are some times when you just have to have good sense, and he used a really good example of Shakespeare. There have been, in terms of the history of the book, but actually in terms of text studies, studies of the text, that you do want to look at multiple versions and editions over time. And, of course, we'll be sensitive to that. We have to be. If we aren't, we aren't good stewards of what we're doing. Go ahead.
No, it's just I don't want to have to argue this from this video.
I think you won the Shakespeare argument. I'm not sure.
There isn't enough time for me to go into the others.
Yeah, right.
But believe me, there are. I can just cite one more example, and that is...
Okay, the Bible?
No. A recent, I suppose, phenomenon of the digital world, in that an author could have a UK publication of her novel and then make changes to accommodate a US audience and change chapters, text for an American edition. Mm-hmm. I usually buy both, and I usually buy them in print, and I would never consider digital.
Oh, well, we're about to get into a real collection development argument here. And
all of these things I assume are never even thought of when you decide, let's just go digital for everything.
Well, what I said was, we will prefer digital, and we will not use words. We will never use words like never. Okay? So there, and foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. However, I would argue in those examples that you gave, particularly I would argue that you need this is personal, okay? Doesn't mean, do not write this in concrete. Do not hand it down on clay tablets from a mountain. I would say we need the print versions of Shakespeare because there are lots of people who do Shakespeare. The example that you gave in novels of UK versus American editions, I can buy that too. But I would also say I would want the print version of that novel so that I could get a lot of that stuff out to a lot of people in a very convenient way. And depending upon what it was, you may want to do it all. And these things, you always have to look in a context. But generally speaking, there is no value in a print version at all. And just think of what it means in a digital world where things change every moment.
how are people going to do textual studies of things that were born digital and will always only be digital? So what that means is that we're just in a hugely complex world, and we need to do the best we can. And I'm sure that people will keep arguing with you, and you will never have the final word. And okay.
I hear from many of our students saying they often go to Schulich or to Hustle because of the longer hours. It's very disruptive to them to have, when they settle down in the evening, many of our students have clinics and classes during the day, and they sit down to study in the evenings. Our libraries close early. Are you thinking of implementing 24/7 access for all libraries?
We will do 24/7 access in any library that wants it.
Thank you.
Except Berks. Did I go out on a limb and say something? Okay, stupid. Okay, good. I'm checking that. The question was, will we do 24/7 in other libraries? And by jolly, we'd love to do that. I mean, I'm acting silly, but really, we would love to do that. Okay. I've got other questions? Yes.
I'd actually like to talk about communication. You talked about the importance of communication and how, you know, those of us who are here, we should take it out to those that are not able to attend. I actually have a problem with that. I would like to see, you know, whatever is discussed here put out by you in, you know, whether it's a print form, an email that you sent to people's emails. You know, you shouldn't have to, you know, carry forth what you said. I mean, it could be open to interpret, you know, how I interpret some of the things that you may have said. As people interpret differently, I think it came directly from you. Not everybody has a chance to go and sit and watch.
Do you know we strained this?
I do know that.
Yeah.
But you've got certain people in certain jobs that, you know, do not have the time while they're working to sit down and watch it.
Or
when they're on
have access.
Or they're on their desk. So.
Well, I can tell you that we will try to do the best we can. We've got, for instance, the bullet points of this are going to be available, but I'm just not ever going to have minutes of these meetings. It's just too, we would be spending way, way, way too much time on something that in my experience doesn't get us a lot of stuff in the end. But I will, when I say that people are responsible for the information that comes out of this, it's no different than saying you're in school and if you didn't make it to class, the test is still going to be on Thursday. It's the same thing.
Maybe
you know.
The interval between...
Yeah, excuse me? Life. Sorry?
Maybe the interval between getting the podcast on archive and live, you know, being watched on live.
Yes.
And it will be shorter. People don't have to wait so long to look for the archive.
Okay. Well, we will look into that, but I think that we get it up as soon as possible. Have you noticed? The question is, can we get the streamed version up as quickly as possible or shorten it? And we will look into that and see if we can try to make it just as absolutely short as we possibly can. Other questions from...
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. That's no uh-oh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. At the beginning of your talk, I heard you say, I talk, you listen, and then you talk, and I listen.
Uh-huh.
And I, that sounds really good, eh? I'm speaking on behalf of LAs because that's what I'm doing. And we don't feel heard. And I want to give you an example of why we don't. I'm a part of the working group for the single service point, and we were told that staff working in the loans, or what some of us called CERT, was going to have to move into the old ILL area here in the clinic. And the Howard Ross people have been relocated there. So the CERT people, and there's 12 LAs that were going to join that area. And that was going to be done by July 1st. And you were going to provide boxes. And that's about all you were going to do. And then, so that didn't happen. And so now we're hearing, like, okay, that's going to happen in December. But I'm just hearing now that maybe that won't happen because you want the whole first floor cleared of offices. And so like, what are we saying here? And like, we know we have jobs, and you're not giving us the jobs. We own the jobs because we have a collective agreement. And it's not out of the goodness of your heart that you're giving us a job. We work hard for it. We do. We work really hard, and we want some respect. And I don't feel that we're being heard. I mean, when you came in, you said it would be different, and I'm really discouraged by this presentation. And I'm really saddened. But, you know, no doors are closed, windows are open, you know, but I'm very, very, I don't hear anything about us in here, really, except possible retraining. I just don't hear anything, any good news. And I don't mean to be obnoxious, but no. I'm telling the truth, you know, and I'm not obnoxious, actually. I'm being pretty polite.
I respect you for what you're saying, and I hear what you're saying, and I, you know, that we're here to serve our users. If that's what we do, and libraries exist to serve our users, and when we had monks in the scriptorium, they were printing out their little pens and whatever, and they weren't checking out books and digitizing materials because they didn't have the tools at their disposal. But there were people who needed to do jobs and to serve and to have functions, but the functions change. And as I wish that you would give me more specifics on what you feel that the library assistants weren't, that there wasn't much in this presentation that had to deal with them specifically, because what I was talking about were tasks and things that needed to be done and not about specific groups of people, except to understand that change is hard. And I have to tell you that change is going to happen because the world isn't going to stand still. And so, you know, if you can help me with more specifics, I will try very hard to address those specifics. And you did give me the one about moving. And that, I can tell you, and from what I know right now, and that is exactly the category of the thing that I told you that I will do with you in terms of communicating, that I will tell you as things happen. But then when things change, you have to accept the fact that something changed, and so the information I'm going to give you is going to be different. Not that I'm not communicating with you, but that the facts changed. And so with the move thing that you were talking about, because of the asbestos abatement, which we fully thought was going to happen this summer, and we were quite upset to hear wasn't going to happen this summer, we thought that people were going to have to move. And we honestly did our best to work with people in that move. And then we found out that we weren't going to have to do it. So then we told you as soon as we knew. And as far as this renovation project of the whole first floor, this is earth breaking news, you know, this is not earth breaking, but this is the first time I have to tell you about plans that are ongoing. And this is we'll be making plans within the next year, but that asbestos abatement is going to happen in the summer of in May, and we're going to have to move people before them. So that's not going to wait given this overall plan that we've got coming up. So
So the important thing is for you to ask questions so I can clarify things. And I hope I've clarified some of what's going on with the move and the various moves. Does that make sense?
Here, or if it is, I won't try to get organized, but it would be nice to meet with you, because we do have, we do talk amongst ourselves, and we have some real concerns, so.
Yeah, I'd be happy to meet with you guys.
Yeah. So no one's moving into any, none of the CERT people are moving before May 2010?
The question is nobody going to move before May 2012? And what we can say is,
asbestos work will begin
May 2012.
I'm asking about the staff moving before.
Right. Okay. The only fact I can give you that's firm is the asbestos work must begin May 2012 to be finished in the summer. So we'll need to work with the CERT staff that are in the Red Path area to have them moved out by May 1st. So whether they will need to work out, will that be April 1st, April 15th? But we don't have a firm date. But we do know May 1st for work.
Okay, so it's not around the single service point then?
No, you can do it. Okay. The single service point is January 1.
And the staff isn't in the
staff can stay where they are.
All right.
Yeah. But we do have to move
so
for the asbestos.
Really, though.
There's a lot of that. So,
okay.
So what these were a lot of clarifying questions of exactly when moves would happen around the asbestos abatement that's scheduled May the 1st. You know, I would not take May the 1st to the bank because we already have an experience of them having changed their mind. I think it's going to happen this time, and we will organize the moves around that, and we will be back to you as soon as we have information. You know, sometimes it looks like we're withholding information, or sometimes it looks like we're changing our mind, and I'm trying my best not to withhold information, one. But two, sometimes we do change our minds because the facts change, or we learn something and we do it better. There was another question here.
Part of our concerns for staff is that best plans are in flux and changing. We're unsure of where we stand, and you're unsure of where you stand. So it makes for a very uneasy coexistence, and I think that's where a lot of our points of contention are coming from.
So
you said that we were going to be very service-oriented, which is fun, which is great, but how far are we going to go with that? Are we going to go to the point where the dog wags the tail, or tail legs and dogs? This is where a lot of the staff are trying to figure out where the difference is.
Is there a question? I just assumed that this is a statement. And actually, I think you said very well what I've been saying, in that the only thing I can guarantee you is change. Right now, the only thing that I can absolutely guarantee you is change, and I think there's a 90% chance that we'll do asbestos abatement in May the 1st. And we will involve you and let you know and communicate and communicate and communicate to the best of our ability when we know what we know. But as things change, what we tell you is going to change just because it does. That's the reality of the world we live in. And I know it's hard. That's why I just say it straight out. I know that change is hard for a lot of people. I know uncertainty is hard for a lot of people. But I would lie to you if I said, I know that this is what's going to happen, A, B, C, D. that would be the worst thing I could tell you, because I know that I couldn't guarantee that. So, Lonnie.
The point on information literacy?
Yes.
Lonnie's talking about information literacy.
I noticed it said information literacy program. So does that mean that there will be a group or a committee or whatever you want to call it that is responsible for information literacy system-wide, or are they going to take a look at information literacy and maybe we can have an information literacy librarian? Is it a position, or is it a group that's going to take care of this, or is it one a selected person who's going to have responsibility for that?
Lonnie's asking about whether information literacy means a group and a collective effort or a person. And we're going to start out with looking at the situation through a collective effort of those who are most involved with information literacy across the system. And that they may end up recommending a structure and a hierarchy, or we may keep it in less, it may be something that remains a work group for X amount of time. But we'll be looking to the people who are actually deeply involved in it. And we've got people deeply involved in information literacy who feel that that's practically the most essential part of their jobs across the whole system. So, yes, Valerie.
You said you would be joining the Hathi Trust as soon as possible. Does that mean tomorrow? And are we the only Canadian library joining? And how does that relate to our institutional repository? Or our digital collections that we digitized from Rare Books or whatever, will they be made available through the Hathi Trust?
Well, part of Hathi is that it is a place where you can move your digitized materials in and they're preserved. So we will be developing plans for that. I can't tell you much more in detail.
But will we have access to everything that's already been contributed by
partners? Yes. I don't know if it's now. It's as it becomes available.
Soon.
Stay tuned. And the question is about the implementation and the timing of joining Hathi Trust and what it means. So we will be joining. I think it's a no-brainer, and I don't know if we're the only Canadian institution. Are we? Well, that's pretty cool then, I think. I wouldn't be surprised that the director who's coming into the University of Toronto is a very good personal friend of mine, and so I suspect we will be up to collaborative mischief as much as we can be. Whether that reassures people or frightens you, I don't know. Other questions? Yes.
Right now, there's hardly anything coming to interlibrary loans to Howard Voss because of maybe the word
right.
Renovation. I don't know.
Okay. The question is, what is going to happen to ILL in terms of Howard Ross? And I can honestly tell you I cannot answer that question because I do not know. And we will try to get information back to you. Okay? Any other question, whatever, thought? Yes?
Can I ask about the terrace? When is the terrace getting done? Is it this year or next year?
The terrace... the question was a question about the terrace.
And the question is, the terrace is getting done next year and the year after.
Okay, so
it's a two-year project after this.
Because we're having difficulty getting into the building. Those that are in McLennan and Redpath right now are having a little bit of a detour
Yeah.
So what are you? What are we going to do when the terrace gets
the stairs?
The stairs go nowhere. So we will not be able to get.
No,
to
point B. I think that they're doing it in two stages over 2 years, partially because of that.
But you'll let us know, right?
I will let you know as soon as I know.
Thank you.
You know, I guess I'm admitting that I'm not omniscient, right? Not only do I not know everything, my crystal ball gets pretty hazy sometimes. Yeah. Yes.
Relating to an email that I've seen and received today, you maybe can solve something. Early morning people do not have access to through the service, although there is a guard there. Is there a way you could arrange all the people, the library staff, to have access? Early morning people are not a lot. It's probably 20. But it's the people who arrive before your...
I know exactly what you mean, and I'll look into it.
Thank you so very much.
Because I've been shut out by that same guy. And that's why I know exactly what you mean. And I have no... Again, we don't control those guys. Those guys aren't ours.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of asking.
Well, if it is just a matter of asking, we'll get you on there. If it's an issue of authority that we don't control, then you'll respect that when I tell you. One more question, and then we gotta go. Yes, yeah.
Positions on your various work groups and whatnot, trying to make, you know, plans and sort out logistics and whatnot. I'm fairly unfamiliar with the system by which you select people as it is. It doesn't seem to go very deep for looking for talent within the organization to contribute to those groups. Is there a move towards making that happen, like trickle down further?
Are you talking about having people? Well, I see the groups being formed somewhat like the working groups for this investigating the single service point in Hustle.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, for instance, we know now that there's an LA on that
group, right? But that's the first any of us heard of it. You know what I mean? Like, there isn't a big call to find people to sit on those committees. Who actually know, like, their environment, for instance, right? Like, one of the few things that worked in the team structure at Life Sciences was when we worked on a project, people who knew what they were talking about, regardless of whether they were LAs or liaison librarians, worked together. Mm-hmm. And that's how things got done. Mm-hmm. And it seems like there's an opportunity, if we're really serious about communication, to make that happen broader.
Yeah.
But we really need to have, like, everyone just can't sit around picking the same people they always want to work with, right?
Yeah, I hear what you say, and we will be asking for interest, and then we will be doing our best to make things as representative as possible and still be practical about it. I think the reason you didn't hear about the Hustle stuff was because it was a localized library thing.
Problem, right?
Yeah, but... I don't think it really was. How do you manage operations in a specific building? And it wasn't a system-wide question.
Right.
Yeah.
At some point, we'll be
right.
That, so.
Yeah. Some of these questions are system-wide questions, and some of them are more localized, specific questions. And we will be asking for interest from the groups that make sense, given the question.
It wouldn't be a bad idea if there was a place where everyone could go to see all of the committees, all of the working groups, who's on it, so that if they had issues or had some information, they know who to contact and who to talk to.
That's number 32 on my to-do list. Bruna can guarantee you it's on my to-do list. But as we put these groups together, we will make sure that the membership is up there and people know about it.
You know, pretty soon there are going to be so many working groups here. These are not going to be things that people... Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, oh, my gosh, if you ask me to do one more thing, I'm going to die. We've got a hugely ambitious agenda here, and that worries me a little bit. Some of the time frames we've set up for ourselves worry me a little bit. But, you know, we made it. We can change it. So, okay. Thank you all very much for trotting over here. Appreciate it.